is Omaha Sports Insider with Joe Quinn and Nick Handley. On your radio at AM 590, online at AM590ESPNradio.com, and on your smart speaker, ask Alexa to open AM 590 Omaha. Now, here's Joe and Nick.
Akinmole, foul on the way, basket, and a free throw coming. Io Akinmole riding the challenge. Chance for the rare four-point opportunity for the sophomore from Papillion. Jackson with 10 to shoot. Pile inside, able to power through the finish. And a free throw coming, basket in the foul for a moment. It gets so loud in here, you couldn't even hear the whistle for a moment. For Dylan Call for three. First lead for the Dons since 15:48 in the first. They've trailed by as many as 12. They're now in front with 9.5 to go. Zach Jackson, the senior from Wichita, trying to answer and does so from the top of the key.
I was about to say, Jackson and Hahn, they need to start trying to take this game over offensively. That's a huge hoop for Zach Jackson here. Let's see if it sparks them defensively now.
Need to shoot down. Robinson. K.J. Robinson from the wing. Big time triple. The Mavs back up by one. With a fresh shot clock up to Weir for three. Matt Weir from the top of the circle.
I tell you, just a fraction of an inch. If that rebounds an air ball, Omaha's right there for it. It did graze the rim. They don't get the old glass. And now a three-pointer that swings the lead back the other way. Done a terrific job guarding Hahn here with the ball, but this guy's clutch late. Miss Hahn able to get by Holba. Finish over Carl at the rim. Credit Hahn, though. He's had a tough night, especially in the second half. A big-time finish that time.
Mitch Hahn trying to erase the deficit. The triple in the corner from Mitch Hahn.
Hahn, five straight now for Omaha. Holba lost him in the corner that time.
Hahn stripped by Kirsten Harold. Harold right at Jackson. Conshaw gets it wedged. Possession in favor of the Mavericks. It'll go down as a jump basketball. 14 seconds, a berth in the Summit League title game on the line. Matt Weir over to Kirsten Harold. Seven to play. Weir, Carl, Conshaw, two on the clock.
Ah, ESPN Plus with Midco. The call there.
Give Midco the love there. ESPN Plus just takes it from Midco.
They do,
and
but
that group, by the way, I like them.
They do a good job.
They did a solid job. They've had a couple rotating crews. This group was fun. They were a good play-by-play guy, good analyst. Yeah. Maybe it's because, you know, UNO won.
Well, I mean, that certainly helps.
Maybe that's why I liked it so much.
You say if they ended up losing, then we're all going to be criticizing the announcers as the reason why they lost.
Man, they stunk.
You jerks, call a better game and maybe UNO wins. Nick, I will admit, like you, anybody that has seen this happen in the past, that last three-pointer that John Conshaw let fly, I think all of us were holding our breath and like, oh, man, this guy, the way that he shoots, that this is going in. The last 3.5 minutes of this game, nobody scored. Not a single free throw, not a single point. The last 3 minutes and 30-some-odd seconds, there was zero scoring. I thought for sure when Conchar let that ball go, it was going through the cylinder, but it doesn't, and UNO marches on to compete for a bid in the NCAA tournament tonight.
Well, I was convinced that John Conchar would take the last shot, but Kason Harrell was actually trying to create some space for himself. And mind you, you didn't need a three. You just needed a jumper to win the game. I mean, UNO
try and draw a foul, go to the stripe, win it there. You know,
UNO wins this one by one. Kason Harrell started to kind of create some space. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, yes, yes, yes. You, please, you, yes, Kason Harrell, take the shot. Even though Kason Harrell had a decent night. Like, yes, I'd rather you shoot that ball than John Conchar. And then as soon as it goes into 55's hands, I'm just, oh God. Shades of 2017. I'm sitting at the scores table with 8 seconds to go in that game. They call timeout. We're talking at the scores table like we know where the ball's going. UNO knows where the ball's going. Everybody in the arena knew where the ball was going. Didn't matter. John Conchar knocks down like a 30-footer. Doesn't touch rim at all. Just splash. And they win that game. The 3-minute scoring drought just led you to believe that the one big bucket that would be made would come from one of the best shooters and one of the best players in the Summit League history in John Conchar. And he... I mean, he was defended, but he got a pretty good look. He missed it pretty badly. So it goes to show you, even the most experienced players, and you heard right there from the mid-kill guys, that Mitch Hahn had kind of a tough second half, which he did, that the grind of that type of a game, just when you think you've played so many minutes in college basketball, there are times that you can just do enough to alter your shot because of the moment, and I think that that's what happened to John Conchar. In fact, I think Conchar maybe was a bit surprised that he had a little bit more space than what I think he anticipated. I assume he probably felt there was going to be kind of like what happened in 2017 where he hit the shot. He had two guys converging on him. It was defended very well, and at the very least, maybe you're leaning into a guy. But I think when he got a little bit of that space, it maybe surprised him just enough to alter that shot. Regardless, this was a very similar game to what UNO won Saturday night against North Dakota, where they would get out. Their biggest lead was 12, but they could never extend it. And then it would be a 9-point game. And then UNO would put it back to a 12-point game. Then it would be a 7-point game. Then back to a 9-point game. Then all of a sudden, it's a 6-point game. 8-point game, 6-point game becomes 4 to a 2-point game. Fort Wayne hits a 3, they take the lead, and then you're just going back and forth. But
they never let it get too far away. I think Wayne was like 4, I was up by 4 at one point, and that was it. I mean, that was as far as they let it get away from them.
Yeah, and you heard also during those highlights, they took the lead with about, I think it was a little bit more than 4 minutes to go. So you still had the media timeout left, the final media timeout. They had not led since the 15-minute mark in the first half. So UNO for that stretch basically kept Fort Wayne at arm's length. And it was as if when each team would start nailing shots, it wasn't like one team would just go on a run. Both teams would start getting hot, and then both teams would start getting cold. Now, Fort Wayne started off a lot colder than what they finished the previous night against South Dakota, where they could not miss. I mean, they were over a 50% clip beyond the arc. They really struggled there in the first half, which allowed UNO to kind of balloon that lead to 12. But you just knew, and this is what you got to expect tonight. If UNO somehow gets in front and they start pulling away, don't get comfortable. If you're watching this team for the first time or if you've watched them, you know, don't get comfortable. Because for whatever reason, they're not designed to really play well with the lead because they do launch a lot of quick shots. It's part of their style. If they find an open look on the perimeter, they're going to let that thing go. And if they're hitting them, yeah, you're in trouble. But if they're not and you're down, you're going to get a rebound and you're going to have a chance for a quick possession. And that's what allowed Fort Wayne to get back into this thing. Same thing with North Dakota, where even with a lead, that they would kind of miss some shots here. And all of a sudden, you give the opponent other possession, quick possession, and then they knock down some shots. So, I mean, it was an ugly game. If you would have said UNO was going to play a game in the 60s, upper 50s, you would not like their chances. But this is what they've shown now throughout the year. They can win the games. They'd like to see it in the 80s, but they've shown enough, I just think, overall confidence that they can do what it's going to take to win even a lower scoring game. And that thing was, it was nail-biting. It was fun. It was maddening. The amount of turnovers, I mean, there was the ball handling skills for both teams, but especially UNO down the stretch was just, I mean, absolutely maddening.
Well,
it really was.
You know, Fort Wayne had 16 turnovers in the game. UNO had 17. And Nick, in the last 3.5 minutes where nobody scored, God, Kasem Harrell, I think, was the player for Fort Wayne who had a breakaway and missed the layup.
It was Conchar who got stuffed.
I mean, Conchar got stuffed at the rim.
Yeah.
And then you had Matt Pyle miss a couple of close-range ones that would have extended the UNO lead. If you are Darren Hansen or you're any of these guys that are out there and you're used to playing games in the 70s, 80s, or even higher in a lot of cases, you're looking up at the clock and realize, man, we haven't scored in like a minute. And then it's like, man, we haven't scored in like 2 minutes. It's still the same. Like, A team that doesn't have this kind of a mentality, that would just melt them, I would think. You would get forced into making a mistake, somebody would commit a dumb foul, and then all of a sudden, you don't know what happens. But I think it just goes to show you intestinal fortitude of this particular team. When you can survive a game at 61-60 where nobody scores in the last 3-plus minutes and manage to find a way to win. That, to me, maybe says even more than winning a game where you score 90 points and end up blowing somebody out. It's just being able to gut through a win like that. Incredible stuff last night.
This game was the perfect example of where you just insert whatever cliche. I tweeted that out last night, whether we're talking about grit, determination, confidence, whatever you want to put in there, belief, just the overall understanding, the self-awareness of you will be able to make the final play, whether it's a defensive stop or a big shot, to come away with the win. That's what this team has been about all year. It just is. It's what they've been about, minus Oral Roberts. I mean, that is what they've been about all year long. It's got to mean something, in my opinion. And yes, I'm a fan. That's my school. This is such a big moment. I want to see my school finally get to the NCAA tournament. I watched the way that they played 2 years ago, and I still don't think that they always had the answer the way that this team seems to. Now, the thing is, you still got 40 minutes, and the one time that it doesn't work for you could happen on the big stage. So I don't think anybody, just because UNO is not playing South Dakota State, they're playing North Dakota State, a team that had them on the ropes on the road just within the last month. Nobody that has watched this team will feel comfortable about this until the clock hits zero and UNO is ahead. But when I see the way that they just never really lose their composure, and you saw a glimpse of that yesterday, though, I will say this, where the game seemed to maybe kind of get sped up on them a little bit. KJ Robinson, who's usually very reliable with the basketball, he was making some really bad turnovers. Iowa Kanwole, same thing. Mitch Hahn, Zach Jackson, I mean, some of your more reliable, experienced players, it was almost like the game sort of sped up and they wanted to be the guy. Thankfully, it didn't cost them. But for the most part, they have just found a way to finish these games out. I couldn't really say that about the team 2 years ago. So you get the feeling like that's got to mean something for this squad. That's got to mean something big for them. But I guess we'll find out. I'm so amped to see this game tonight. You know, 4 hours of doing sports talk radio, it's got to go by fast because I cannot wait to see this thing. I feel confident, but I don't feel comfortable either.
All right, before we take our first break of the night, ESPN Plus did have the TV coverage last night. Here's Coach Darren Hansen after the game talking about how it played out.
What a finish to that game. You guys held on, but it was by the skin of your teeth.
Yeah, no doubt about that one. I'll tell you what, that's two teams right there who doesn't want their season to end. So you have to give Fort Wayne just so much credit. John does a great job. We all know that in the league. His team fights like crazy. Like John Conchar is incredible. He sets the table for everybody else on that thing. But I want to give my guys credit. They really fought and they really battled and they hit some big shots to go ahead. But then we came back and hit some big ones as well. So, you know, I'm so proud of our guys. And I don't know what else to say right now, but I'm happy we're moving on. We're going to need some sleep, I know that.
Hey, you talk about this team and this matchup with Purdue Fort Wayne, and both of you are known for your offense, but it was defense that won out in the end.
No doubt about that. And we knew that we kind of had to do that. We thought we had to get up in the ball better. We knew we had to play better ball screen defense because, you know, John is so good at coming off of those screens. And I thought we did that for the most part. We weren't perfect, but sometimes basketball is a game of mistakes, but who makes the fewest of them? And I thought we made fewer mistakes tonight than all we have in the last couple games.
This will be your second appearance in the Summit League Tournament Final. Came up short a couple of years ago. You get North Dakota State on this floor tomorrow night for a chance to go to the NCAA tournament. How's that sound?
Well, I think it sounds terrific. And tell you what, I talk about John Kaufman, David Richmond, and his bunch are really good too. So it's going to be a great game. I'm looking forward to it. I'm glad we're in it. But we need to take a big, deep breath first.
And he does. I mean, I think there everybody did. I think everybody did. Yep. Everybody watched that game that is polling for UNO. And I hope to see a similar thing that happened 2 years ago where if you didn't make it up to Sioux Falls, and by the way, it's only a little over 3 hours and it's at 8 o'clock, so you know what, you can get up there if you don't. And I think I got to stay away because I forgot the very first year that they were in the Summit League tournament. I did go to that one too, and they lost in the first round of Denver. 2 years ago I went to that Summit League championship game against South Dakota State and they lose. You know, Tredion Holland's shot doesn't fall. I'm 0-2 out there, so I need to stay away.
Good call. I'm happy. I'm glad you're adult enough to make that decision. This is good.
And the radio voice, Gary Sharp, even told me, he said, "You coming up?" I said, "Yeah, Gary, man, I was 0-1 against Denver. Then went to 0-2 when I went to South Dakota State." And he said, "Yeah, you don't come up.
Yeah, good.
Please don't come up. But the thing is, if you're going to make it up, get out there because there are going to be so many more open seats than there would be if South Dakota State was playing. Allow UNO to have at least a neutral court type feel, if not a home court advantage. But if you're not going to make it out, get out to the sports bars like they did 2 years ago. Get out there, make a watch party out of this thing because you just don't know how often it's going to play. And you might just see history tonight. You might see that little school over on 60th and Dodge finally punch a ticket to the NCAA tournament after just their eighth year of official NCAA Division I affiliation. It's a special, special opportunity.
All right. That's where we start today here on a Tuesday afternoon. We got headlines coming up next. Greg Smith joins us, bottom of the hour, HailVarsity.com on Nebraska Spring Football here on AM 590.
ESPN tomorrow. It's kind of nice the way it works out for all of the Division I basketball programs, because tonight, the night belongs to UNO Summit League Finals, 8 o'clock ESPN2. Tomorrow, right here on AM 590, we will bring you the start of the Big Ten tournament. Nebraska taking on Rutgers, 5:30.
Who's excited for that one?
Survive. Just like TJ texted me last night after the UNO game. Survive in advance. The same rule applies for Nebraska, but they've got Rutgers 5:30 tomorrow. 4:30 is your Husker courtside pregame coverage. We will have that for you right here on AM 590. So we are off at 4:30 tomorrow. And then Thursday, Creighton gets underway against Xavier out in the Big East tournament. So you got the Mavs tonight. You've got Nebraska tomorrow night. And then you've got Creighton on Thursday. So it works out well. And maybe Nebraska will also be playing on Thursday. We'll see.
Let's hope. Well, I'm optimistic.
First things first.
I'm hopeful.
You got to avenge that terrible loss to the Scarlet Knights. Dirty jerks.
Chio Baker used to date Ariana Grande. Yeah.
Maybe she, I mean, it's
allegedly.
It's NYC. Will she be there?
They just had a player deported.
Allegedly?
Yeah.
Rutgers did?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's
Rutgers. That's the kind of
Rutgers
thing.
Rutgers type things.
Only Rutgers Athletics has to deal with that kind of stuff. Ariana Probably
Grande.
Not in the Big Ten, but.
Maybe she'll show up at MSG. I mean, it's a.
Nah, man. She's on. She's on and gone.
Yeah, she might be back with Big Sean. So
she was just a brief stopover.
Did you guys see, by the way,
Pete Davidson?
Oh, Pete Davidson is with Kate Beckinsale.
Yes,
she's like 20 years old. That's like Ashton Kutcher and
he's
with the Demi Moore back when they were together.
He's what, mid-20s?
Yeah,
she's
like 25.
She's I want to say
she's four, 40 I think four, 45. I think she's 45 or 44, and he's 25. That's weird.
I mean, you know, if that's what love looks like,
I don't get it.
Well,
I just don't get it. Pete Davidson,
look,
I don't get it.
I saw the picture of them. Was it at the Rangers game?
Oh, yeah. They were like making out hardcore.
Oh, man. I mean, that was like, whoo.
Like swallowing her tongue.
I know. Well, I think it more looked like she was swallowing his tongue, if you want to be technical about it. But
what?
I'm just like, man.
I just don't get it.
He's the bad boy, man.
I don't
he's
know.
A rebel.
He's not even that funny. I don't get it.
All right, well, this first headline you guys could talk about for 20 minutes, but remember we got others to get to. But college coaches and famous celebrities and others indicted in an admissions bribery case.
Go get him, Joe.
Oh, hey, man, look, we're going to spend an entire segment on this because I love this case. This is it really has very little to do with college athletics. This is basically a bunch of Richie Riches trying to pay this middleman to get their kids into elite schools that they didn't qualify for. So they cheated on the ACT and SAT. That was part of the scam. They also bribed college coaches to kind of fake recruit these kids because, like, let's use USC as an example, okay? USC has two sets of admission standards, right? Your normal student has to get a certain ACT score, have a certain GPA. If you just want to be an undergraduate student there, you got to meet those standards. Then there's the student-athlete standards, okay, which we all know how that works, right? I mean, USC wants to be good at football, so if you're going to apply that to football, you got to kind of give other sports a break. So if you want to be good at football, you're going to have to take kids at some level that don't have the same
18 ACT as your qualifier.
Yeah, so you take an 18 ACT, that's not going to get you into USC just as a typical undergrad. So basically, they bribe these coaches to fake recruit these kids. Nick, they even had like fake recruiting profiles with like photoshopped pictures of these kids' faces on other athletes' bodies.
Was like Huddle involved with this?
I don't know, man. But they would send this stuff in, and they, you know, the big person who's involved with this, it sounds like, is the senior associate AD, like the number two person at USC is directly implicated in all of this. But like the Wake Forest volleyball coach, Stanford had to fire their sailing coach, believe it or not, part of this.
I mean, David Shaw knew better.
Yeah, I was like, going to say.
Yeah, right. Okay.
It is mentioned. It's brought up some of these football programs were approached, but they're like,
yeah,
no, no.
So as much as they're willing to bend the rules, they're not going to bend the rules for someone that can't help their program either.
But the best part,
I don't think David Shaw is that kind of guy anyway.
The Richie Riches that are involved in all of this, okay, there's a couple of big names that have gotten ensnared in this.
I felt like you should have led with this.
I know, Felicity Huffman, who was in Desperate Housewives, but then the big one is Lori Loughlin.
Aunt Becky from Full
From
House.
From Full House, her and her husband spent $500,000 to get their two daughters into USC, and in part of the email she sent to this middle guy, she gripes because the only school they could get into was Arizona State.
That's party school.
I mean, come on.
You know,
who's going to hate on Arizona State like
all
that?
All I can add to that, Anytime we think about Lori Loughlin involved in this, I just say, whatever happened to the predictability? The milkman, the paperboy, the evening TV. Everywhere you look, everywhere you go. Come on, the Full House song. The Full House song. Anytime this thing gets brought up, people better be singing the Full House song in the background.
I love it. I love it. I love this case.
All right, well, plenty of moves in the NFL free agency. You guys can talk about any ones you want, but the ones I'll list off here. Anthony Barr was going to be a Jet. He's now staying with the Vikings. Former Viking running back Latavius Murray, he's going to the Saints. Saints backup QB Teddy Bridgewater going to stay with the Saints, now go to the Dolphins. And Terrell Suggs going to go to the Arizona Cardinals.
Yep, and the
there's one more big one out there that I think we're all kind of waiting on, right?
Well, I've been monitoring a lot of stuff with my own team, assuming this is going to be a very boring free agency. Now, they did add a Seattle running back. They did add a Jets cornerback. No real big names right now, but they have since cut Deion Sims a few weeks back to free up some cap space. They reworked Kyle Long's contract to free up cap space. And the big one this morning is they reworked Khalil Mack's deal to where now a lot of that money is part of a signing bonus. They're able to free up almost $11 million in cap space. The Bears are working on something, and the rumor is they are now entering the gates of Le'Veon Bell. And it sounds like the Jets are still the front runner, but all of a sudden the Bears are freeing up a lot of cash and a lot of cap space to make some kind of a move. And according to sources, according to people close to the organization, it sounds like they are very interested in Le'Veon Bell.
I don't want that for your team, Nick. I honestly don't, but that's the shoe everybody seems to be waiting to fall right now.
Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney told Teddy Greenstein that Omaha could be a legitimate option as a future men's basketball conference tournament site.
Well, and I know that it was mentioned along with Minneapolis, Detroit, and Omaha were the three that he was specifically asked about. Now, 2023 is the first open date for the Big Ten tournament. It's committed for the next 4 years beyond this one. Keep in mind, Jim Delaney won't be around at that point. Whenever this tournament gets bid or placed, I'm assuming he'll already be gone. So a lot of it is going to depend on whoever takes over. I mean, Nick, whoever takes over as the Big Ten commissioner may say, it makes no sense to play this thing anyplace besides the United Center in Chicago. We're going to abandon this whole East Coast thing. Maybe we'll bounce back and forth between Indy and Chicago or whatever, but we're going to be a Midwestern conference, and we're going to stick with those two locations. Do I think Omaha could do it? Yes, absolutely. I think the Big Ten tournament here would go over gangbusters because everything that special event-wise here does incredibly well. The Big Ten already has a presence here. They're going to play their Big Ten baseball tournament here for years and years to come. So do I think that it makes sense? Do I think Omaha would do a great job with it? Yes, at some level. I remain skeptical that it will actually ever happen. I think the biggest thing they have going against it, I mean, in reality, is travel logistics, getting in and out of Omaha, it's not as easy as Chicago or Indianapolis or New York City. I think that would be the thing that would ultimately perhaps hold it back. However, would I love to see it? Yes. Do I hope it happens? Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it would be fantastic. We talked about if you're going to go all the way out to Washington, D.C., or you're going to go out to MSG and bump the tournament up a week during all of the same games as the mid-majors. Why wouldn't you look at more of a centrally located, like Chicago and Indianapolis makes so much sense for the Big Ten. It just does. And to try to cater to the East Coast schools, especially teams like Maryland and Rutgers, the newcomers, well, if you're going to cater to them, why aren't you catering to the other schools that have been here? I'm sure the Iowas and Nebraskas of the world would love to see a little bit more centrally located. And what would even be wrong with Des Moines every now and then, too, and have it at the Wells Fargo Center? So, I mean, there's a lot of conversation. The thing that I can speak on this with a Big Ten baseball tournament, and that thing after 5 years will probably maybe make a pit stop somewhere and then come right back to Omaha. Nobody wants to host the Big Ten baseball tournament because it just doesn't draw. But when you do have it in Omaha, people need a reason to go before the College World Series to TD Ameritrade, and they love supporting Nebraska. There's a reason why Omaha wanted that tournament. I would assume Omaha would really want this tournament too. I don't know the feelings for Chicago and Indianapolis, Madison Square Garden, especially, because now they're kind of doing double duty. I don't know what their overall interest is. I just know, the very least, Omaha would want it, but are the other logistics, would it line up enough to do it?
Well, and the question I have, and Nick, you know, the convention and visitors bureaus in all of these cities would be able to better answer this than I would, but a men's basketball tournament that involves 14 teams, you're not only just talking about being able to house the teams, you're talking about, I mean, how many fans do you suppose some of these schools bring on average? I mean, your Michigan schools, I would assume several thousand people probably travel. Mm-hmm. You know, Nebraska, obviously, is not as big of a deal. You know, Iowa, you're going to have people traveling to watch that. I don't know what the hotel infrastructure needs to be like in terms of the volume to truly do one of these things right.
Well, I mean, assume it'd be okay. If you can host an NCAA regional and you can host an NCAA first and second round, I don't think that's a problem.
Yeah, but you're talking about 14 teams sure. as opposed to eight.
Eight, but I think you could probably accommodate that.
I don't know. I would assume Omaha would be able to do it, but I don't know that for a fact. I don't know what kind of like specs they're looking for in terms of that kind of thing.
Former Buckeye Urban Meyer to join Fox studio team along with Brady Quinn, Reggie Bush, Matt Leiner, and Rob Stone on the one-hour show on Saturday mornings.
Yeah, sounds about right. This seemed like the natural next move for Urban Meyer. What I don't want to see is kind of what happened the time that he left Florida, where there was talk about health, there was talk about, and this the last time he said he needed to spend a little bit more time with his family, and clearly he was not doing that because he was always on the road doing ESPN college football analysis. This time it's, you know, a lot more conversation about, you know, the thing with his head and sort of the health right now that he's going through. It's in his blood, so it doesn't surprise me that he's going to have some kind of a role. I'll be curious, though, how much he's used, because I just feel like the more he gets used, the more he's going to have that itch to want to coach again.
Well, and Nick, I don't know. You know, maybe I'm a little bit jaded here, but I'm kind of done with Urban Meyer for the moment. Like, I don't need to hear him on college football for this 1 year, because I'm kind of with you. I think, you know, when USC decides to fire Clay Helton after next season, you know, they're going to make a huge play for Urban Meyer. Or when Brian Kelly, you know, decides to go to the NFL or decides to move on from Notre Dame, or they fire him because they get impatient, Urban Meyer's going to be in play there. I mean, I do not believe in my heart of hearts that he is done coaching. And I just don't like the way that he left Ohio State. I really don't. I mean, nothing against Ryan Day or anything that they're doing there now, but Urban Meyer, to me, tried to play the victim in all of this on his way out the door, and I don't believe that he was the victim, really, in any way, in any of this. I'm sorry he has this thing with his head. I really, truly am. And if it's that big of a deal, and it's a huge health concern, then why aren't you taking the time to deal with that and be with your family as opposed to...
You got plenty of money.
I know. It's like, well, I'm not going to coach anymore. I understand that the demands of doing television are less than all of that, but I'm sure they're having to fly him to Los Angeles every week. I mean, if it was a health issue and you need to spend more time with your family and deal with your health, then why aren't you off dealing with your health? I mean, you spent, what, a month doing that, and now you're going to race right back to work? I don't.
It's in his blood.
I know. And I'm kind of done with it, to be honest with you.
And finally here, a short and sweet one, but the anxiety for parents is real in this one. A young mother on a flight from Saudi Arabia to Malaysia reportedly had the shock of her life when she realized she had accidentally left her baby behind in the airport terminal.
Oh boy, she didn't leave it on the wing or anything, did she?
The plane had yet to take off, but as before was about to, she realized, and it was able to convince the captain to turn the plane around back to the gate.
Well, good for the captain. It's like, I mean,
he said this is a totally new one for us.
The pilot did not go back for Kevin McAllister in Home Alone.
He didn't.
So
but clearly, they were already airborne. This was taxiing.
Oh, this was taxiing. Okay. I thought it was already airborne.
You know, Nick, speaking as a new parent here, I don't imagine how you could possibly ever do that. I am sure that if you're sleep deprived enough and are just, you got 10,000 things going on and you're trying to herd a bunch of things up and you've got, you know, the car seat carrier and the diaper bag and the stroller and everything.
You just forgot
the main attraction, I guess.
I got all the accessories. I forgot the actual source itself, the kid.
I would like to, at some level, be like, man, I guess I can understand how you could do that. But
well, how many times you guys like got a coffee or a drink, put it on top of your car, and then you just take off, forget to bring the drink actually back in your car, and then it spills?
That is true.
You know?
However,
maybe it's something like that.
I can't equate a cup of coffee to my kid.
I wouldn't think so, but I mean, hey, we forget things. We get absent-minded sometimes, so maybe that's all it was.
All right, fair enough. All right, Greg Smith joins us next. Talk a little spring football for Nebraska here on AM590.
Yes, Benoit. Husker spring practice continuing as they resumed yesterday. Media having a chance to take a look at a little bit of the practice. They will be back at it tomorrow and then Friday, and then they break for spring break. Then they will resume the second portion of spring practice leading up to the spring game. Greg Smith, LVarsity.com, joining us. And Greg, first of all, were you out there yesterday? And if so, what did you get a chance to see with the media availability and a chance to witness a little bit of practice?
Yeah, so I was out there, and basically what I was able to see in that the 30 to 40 minutes is that the offense is moving fast. Things move so fast now. And I guess that was the big thing from last year. But even in that little like pre-practice session that we get to see, and then you see a little bit of the stretch, they get a lot of work in a couple hour practice. I can imagine how many reps they actually get per practice.
Greg, any individual athletes stand out to you for one reason or another, maybe good, bad, or otherwise, from what you got to see?
Yeah, the first guy that comes to mind, good, and just the way he's transformed his body, is Cam Jurgens. Well, I was going to say tight end from Beatrice. I'm so used to saying
center.
That. But the center, he looks like a Big Ten center now. Like, it's crazy how much bigger he's gotten. And I don't know if he's going through like full contact drills yet. He was doing all of the non-contact stuff, but he definitely stood out. And then I was watching for Luke McCaffrey, not because I think that he's about to take the starting job or anything like that, but I wanted to see if some of the talk behind the scenes about him kind of grasping the offense and not really slowing things down when he's getting reps was true, and it seemed like that was true from the get-go. So there are a lot of interesting things that happened, but those are the two things that kind of jumped out to me right away.
Greg, I know it's not the most exciting things during spring practice, but I know there was a lot of conversation when Scott Frost spoke last week, and that was about the leadership and the overall taking that natural step forward if you're Adrian Martinez. I don't know if you could see any of that, but just a guy that's probably going to be directing a lot more of the overall offense and maybe doing it in more of a vocal way. Is that kind of what's anticipated?
Yeah, it definitely is. And one of the kind of cool things that we did get to note is when they were doing that, I guess, the Nebraska drill, as Scott said yesterday, it's not the Oklahoma drill anymore here.
Yeah.
when they were doing that Nebraska drill, every time that one of the offensive guys made a good play, Adrian Martinez was the first guy to run out there and give him a high five and congratulate him. He was super engaged in those types of drills yesterday when we got to watch. So I guess it seems like he's taking that step to try and be more vocal and more of a vocal leader, because I guess it doesn't. I think people took it a little bit as a negative, maybe when Scott first said that. But I actually think it's a great sign that when he was asked specifically about what Adrian needs to work on for year two, he immediately went to something that's important, but it's an off the field situation. So I think that's a great sign for Adrian, because he also knows that he can handle it for mentioning that in public the way he did.
Well, and you know, a lot of conversation about Martinez already. I mean, I know that some of the offshore books have him listed as a, you know, top five contender perhaps for like the Heisman Trophy this next year. There's, you know, last year I think, Greg, a lot of people didn't know exactly what to expect. They had high hopes for the kid, but now you're kind of entering that zone of having some expectations placed on you. How do you feel like he's handling that early on here in spring ball?
Oh, I think he's been just fine with that, because I think that he's a level-headed kid, but it also helps that you're really good, right?
Like, yeah.
if it was a situation where he was just a fluke, I think that you don't feel as confident in it. But because he's so good, and you could see that there's still a lot of room for growth, because one of the things that I'm curious to see as spring kind of evolves and we get into fall camp is how the coaches talk about him handling the offense and being able to make faster decisions. So if we saw the numbers that he put up last year, and they did not go as fast as possible with the offense last year, if they can start to speed that up and he's making better and quicker decisions, that's only going to improve his stats and take the team to another level as well.
Just from the defensive side of things, and we know that that's going to be a big area to see a lot of improvement between now and then into fall camp. Just your overall feel on maybe some of the guys that are moving out of place. We know that Doman is going to be actually playing on the outside, but I mean, just your overall feel of the steps that this defense needs to take to move forward.
Yeah, I think to me it starts with the defensive line, and it's not just, you know, we talk a lot about the pass rush and them getting after the quarterback, but it's not just that. In the Big Ten, you've got to be able to stop the run, especially considering on average, your quarterbacks in the league aren't as good. So if you keep them in third long situations because you stop the run on first and second down, I think it can really help. Mm-hmm. So that defensive line and Tony Tuioti's group is what I'm really looking at. And they don't lack for bodies up there, right? There's plenty of guys that they can roll through with, which guys are going to actually take those next steps to be able to get on the field to make an impact.
Well, Greg, let's talk a little about the defensive side of the football. I asked you the question about, you know, some players that stood out. You know, where do you feel like this defense is at realistically right now? I mean, hello?
But I got you. You cut out there for a second.
Any players specifically on the defensive side of the football? I know Nick kind of just asked about the general defensive. Any specific players that jump out to you as good body transformations, maybe doing something a little different than the spring?
Body transformations, not necessarily outside of Ben Stilley. That guy looks every bit the part of 288.
He's big.
But guys, yeah, he's a big kid. But the guys that just individually, I think there's going to be some guys that I think have continued to progress, like Muhammad Berry, who's a clear defensive leader on this team, and I think he's going to have a big year. DeCaprio Boodle is a guy that we spent so much time talking about Lamar Jackson and his struggles with tackling and coverage, and if he's, you know, a done pancake or whatever Travis Fisher called him. But I think Boodle is actually their best corner, so I'm looking forward to seeing his progression as we go through the spring, because if you have a guy that you feel really comfortable with in Boodle, who maybe turned some of those pass deflections into interceptions, you have a guy in the middle of your defense who's calling your defense, and Mo Berry, who's very good and takes another step, I think it could spell some good things for this defense going forward. But there's just a lot of different spots that you need players to take steps forward, especially on that defense.
For the early enrollees, too, realistically, what are you kind of looking at between – I guess what we might be able to see at the spring game, but also guys maybe taking that big step between spring practice and fall camp.
Yeah, to me, Nick Henrich is a guy to really keep an eye on, and I've always been high on him through the recruiting process. And I feel like he kind of got lost in the shuffle because of the way his senior season ended with that knee injury out of Omaha Burke. But he's a guy that I saw running around yesterday, looked good, still adding weight, but he didn't have any brace on the knee at all. I think he's going to have to be counted on as you get Will Honus back acclimated into that inside linebacker room. As you really, I believe you have, what, four scholarship inside linebackers with Honus, Henrich, Colin Miller, and then Mo Berry. So you're going to need some depth at that position. So I think that's a guy as an early enrollee that you'll probably count on. And then, of course, Wandale Robinson. I think everybody's just – you almost put him in his own category because everyone just assumes that he's going to play and play a lot and make an impact.
So I don't know if you guys were there during the Scott Frost trying to knock the football out of the running backs and wide receivers' hands, but if Greg Smith had a football, do you think you'd be able to withstand it? Would you go two hands on the ball, or do you think you might be a fumble liability?
Yeah, I probably would be a fumble liability because I would not be. I wouldn't be thinking about the head coach running up behind me and trying to knock the ball out. So I'd probably just be, you know, in my own little world, la la, and then he comes and knocks the ball out, and I'd probably have to go run because of it, so that would stink.
All right, Greg, before we go, I need your advice, or even just I got to ask you a question. Bears-wise, they're freeing up some cap space. What's going on?
Hopefully that means that Le'Veon Bell is coming through to Chicago, though I'm still a little bit torn on that because there's just a lot going on.
Yeah, I am too.
Just a lot happening there. So he's a great player, and also probably don't talk enough about the time off for football for him,
right?
And what's going to happen when he then comes back. So he's a great player. I'd be happy if they signed him. But I'd be cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm torn because you think of good Le'Veon, what he can do for a team, but then you think of the drama and the off-field antics that sometimes can throw a little bit of a wedge into a locker room. I like what the Bears have going, so I don't know if I want to risk that, but I guess we will see.
We'll see.
Yeah, Greg Smith, LVarsity.com. Appreciate it, Greg. We'll talk soon, man.
Hey, thanks as always, guys. Have a good one.
You bet, sir. All right, plenty more to come on AM 590.
ESPN tomorrow.
Got some pretty sweet things happening online at AM590ESPNRadio.com. You can log on to the MVP Club page there for your chance to win some great prizes. A new one we have up there this week. $250 gift card to Clancy's Pub. Check it out. New remodeled Jack Daniels room. It's where friends come together for great food and fun for the Men's College Hoops Tournament, which gets underway, of course, next week. Again, $250 gift card to Clancy's Pub out there at 168th and West Center Road. So that's up there. I know we also have some concert tickets up there right now and a lot of those local contests. So looking for one of you to log on. It's totally free. Again, AM590ESPNRadio.com is the place to go.
Speaking of the college basketball tournament, and of course, we'll get more into this in really the top of the hour. We're going to be talking to Jeff Colhane, voice of North Dakota State men's hoops, also with that national championship football powerhouse. Going to get his thoughts on the North Dakota State side of things. But also, if you are a student at UNO, I hope you got a chance to get on the bus, but I did read this. They have not one, but like three or four
nice
actual charter
good
buses
good
heading up to Sioux Falls to get as many students there. It's free, or Well, no, I think it's $20. $20, which I think actually gets your ticket. $25. Okay, I'm looking at it right now. The bus will leave Mile Bale student.
No, no, no. $20. $25.
$25 is a lot for a student. Actually, it's not too bad at all, especially if you get a chance to possibly witness history. But it's leaving at 3 p.m. Tickets are $25, which does cover transportation and a ticket to the game.
You got 5 minutes to make your decision.
Hopefully you're there.
So hopefully you are already there.
Don't
if you're not,
miss the bus.
Oof, that's going to be tight.
And
be tight.
I do know if you are a UNO alum, they are going to be having an alumni event like they did 2 years ago. I'm not sure what the room is there. But you get into the Denny Sanford Premier Center, there's going to be all kinds of signs. So if you are a UNO alum, you're making your way up there tonight. They will have a pregame alumni event. Got a chance to check that out 2 years ago. It was really cool to see a lot of people make their way up there. So a lot of things going on leading up to the game. Hopefully we'll see a lot of black and red.
Now, do you know of any local stuff going on here in Omaha that UNO is sanctioning?
I do not. I would assume Exarban Village between the DJ's Dugout and Dudley's and Pauly's. I'm sure those places will be hopping for the game, too. As far as other bars, I'm assuming everybody's going to have the game on throughout Omaha, but as far as like actual watch parties, I would start with Exarban Village, but also maybe kind of look around. I'm sure there's some Facebook listing stuff letting you know if there are some other watch parties outside the Exarban Village area.
All right. As Nick said, Jeff Culhane, voice of the Bison, joins us next on AM 590.
ESPN Omaha.